Welcome to Making Waves, independent voices for peace and justice on WSCA 106.1 LPFM in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Today, March 26th, is our last show of Women's History Month, and we again focus on women and feminism. In the first hour, we will hear a report from last weekend's rally against the Iraq War in Portsmouth, followed by a talk by Frida Berrigan titled Woman and War. In the second hour, we will have announcements, an interview with AFL-CIO organizer Jan Schaefer about women in work, followed by a discussion with UNH feminist activists. We'll also hear political music and other information. First, some news from Jeff White.
Good afternoon. This is Jeff with real news for Making Waves. France recently presented a UN resolution allowing for the prosecution of Sudanese war crime suspects at the International Criminal Court, forcing the United States to choose between accepting a body it opposes or casting a politically damaging veto. The Security Council has been deadlocked for weeks on the issue of holding people accountable in Sudan, drawing criticism that has become mired in haggling while conflict continues to rage in the country's western Darfur region. The United States circulated three Sudan resolutions Tuesday, one authorizing a peacekeeping force, another imposing sanctions, and a third tackling the issue of where to punish those responsible for atrocities. It said a vote on the final issue would have to be put off because of the divisions in the council over the court, but France, Britain, and others were determined to handle the issues at once. France's UN ambassador introduced a draft resolution that would refer Darfur cases to the International Criminal Court. The United States is not party to the court and objects to the world's first permanent war crimes tribunal, in part because it fears that U.S. political leaders could face prosecutions for war crimes that it has committed. If the vote on the resolution goes ahead, the United States will have to decide whether to exercise its veto or abstain. A veto could be politically damaging because it would give the appearance that the United States opposed the punishment of those responsible for atrocities in Darfur, where the number of dead from a conflict between government-backed militias and rebels is now estimated at 180,000. The United States itself has declared genocide has occurred in Darfur and demanded swift action. This from the Associated Press. The United States is releasing $3.2 million in military aid to the Central American nation of Guatemala, more than a decade after such aid was cut off due to human rights abuses during the country's civil war. U.S. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld announced the lifting of the sanctions after a meeting with Guatemalan President Oscar Berger on Thursday. The money is intended for a number of uses, including assisting in training and the modernization of Guatemala's armed forces. Berger, appearing with Rumsfeld in a conference in the Guatemalan capital, said the human rights abuses committed by the Guatemalan military are a thing of the past. Yeah, right! The amount of money being provided to Guatemala is less than the millions provided overtly by the CIA to support repressive right-wing regimes in their wars against leftist guerrillas during the last half century. In Guatemala, at least 120,000 people were disappeared and killed before a peace accord was signed in 1996, 36 years after the Civil War began. During the 1980s, overt U.S. military aid totaled about $30 million, less than that supplied to the governments of El Salvador and Honduras, which fought similar conflicts. But the killing of an American innkeeper in 1990 and subsequent cover-up forced the U.S. government to cut off that aid, though millions more kept flowing secretly from the CIA to the Guatemalan's military commanders until 1995. Though the U.S. government has provided only a small amount of security money, some for counter-narcotics assistance to Guatemala, economic aid has exceeded $100 million a year in the past. Earlier this month, President Berger signed the Central American Free Trade Agreement with the United States, prompting some protests in his country. At least one demonstrator was killed. The measure must still be ratified by the U.S. Congress. The United States has also reached such agreements with El Salvador, Honduras, and Nicaragua. This story from the United Press International. When Mexican President Vicente Fox meets with U.S. President George W. Bush Wednesday in Texas, border security is sure to be a top issue on the agenda. But while recent rhetoric from U.S. and Mexican diplomats cast a rosy glow on border security cooperation, many practical measures taken by the United States to seal the border, particularly the construction of walls, have not gone over so well with Mexico. Though he is seldom critical of Mexico's relationship with the looming neighbor to the north, last week, Mexican President Vicente Fox lashed out at the United States for its construction of walls as a measure to increase border security. "They don't work. They should be knocked down. They are discriminatory," They're an affront to liberty, and no country should be proud of having walls built around it, Fox told a foreign correspondent in Mexico City. Some walls reach 15 feet in height and are surrounded by razor wire, spotlights, cameras, motion detectors, and magnetic sensors, and are patrolled by armed guards and attack dogs 24 hours a day. According to Guillermo Alonso Meneses, a professor at the College of the Northern Border in Tijuana, the barriers have never worked because migrants and anyone who wants to cross the border will always find another way across. The walls that the United States has put up are as embarrassing and as useless as the Berlin Wall, Alonso Meneses told the United Press International. Many researchers and activists who track migrant deaths at the border say that the barriers have forced hundreds of thousands of migrants to attempt dangerous routes through the Sonora Desert, which has resulted in hundreds of deaths over the years. With the walls, more contractors get rich and more migrants die, and nothing is solved, Alonso Meneses says. This story from the Los Angeles Times. Bush administration lawyers urged the Supreme Court on Tuesday to dismiss a lawsuit against Iraq brought by U.S. pilots and soldiers who were captured and tortured by Saddam Hussein's regime during the Persian Gulf War of 1991, saying the president believed it could hurt the rebuilding effort in Iraq. Courts must defer to the president's determination that a nearly $1 billion damage award won by the former prisoners of war would, quote, seriously undermine funding for the essential tasks of the new Iraqi government, Paul D. Clement, acting U.S. Solicitor General, told the justices. The reaction to the former POW's case, due to be acted on by the High Court next month, has rankled some military and veterans groups. Go figure. They say the administration is turning its back on those who fought in the Gulf War. The 17 former POWs and their families sued Iraq under a 1996 law that opened the courthouse door to claims against terrorist states that practiced torture, bombings, and hijackings. They said they had been beaten, starved, and subjected to electric shocks when they were held as prisoners by the Iraqis. Some emerged with broken bones as well as psychological injuries that have yet to heal. The lead plaintiff, Lieutenant Colonel Clifford Acree, was in a plane that was shot down by a surface-to-air missile January 17, 1991. He ejected from the plane but suffered a neck injury. He was taken prisoner, blindfolded and handcuffed, and then beaten until he lost consciousness. His nose was broken, his skull fractured, and he lost 30 pounds during his 47 days of captivity. 2 years ago, a judge awarded the POWs nearly $1 billion in damage and said the award could be paid with the frozen assets of Saddam Hussein's regime. Shortly after the verdict, the Bush administration moved to have it thrown out, saying it interfered with U.S. plans to rebuild a new Iraq. The U.S. Appeals Court in Washington, siding with the administration, voided the judge's verdict last year, but the POWs appealed the issue to the Supreme Court, saying Congress gave torture victims the right to sue state sponsors of terror. And in a related story, this is from the Associated Press, U.S.-led forces trying to capture a suspected Taliban militant got into a firefight that left 7 people dead, including 2 children and a woman, the military said on Thursday. The suspected militant, Raz Mohammed, and 2 other insurgents were also killed in the firefight Tuesday in southeastern Pakatika province near the Pakistani border, the military said. News of the clash came a day after the U.S. military said its aircraft killed 5 suspected Taliban militants near the border of Khost province, and also that U.S.-led troops had shot an Afghan boy during a search operation in a village in the eastern province of Kunar. Afghan leaders have complained repeatedly that U.S. forces use excessive force during search operations and fail to consult with local authorities. UN and human rights officials have warned that civilian deaths are playing into the rebels' hands. And this from the Associated Press. A U.S. Army paratrooper who fled to Canada to avoid serving in Iraq was denied political asylum on Thursday, dealing a blow to other deserters here who argue such duty would force them to commit atrocities against civilians. An immigration board ruled that Jeremy Hinsman had not convinced its members he would face persecution, a cruel and unusual punishment, if returned to the United States. He said the Immigration and Refugee Board had not allowed him to argue that the war in Iraq is illegal and would make that complaint before a federal appeal court. Canada has long opposed American wars. Former Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau declared his home range a refuge from militarism. during the Vietnam War and allowed the 30,000 to 50,000 American draft dodgers to settle here. Ottawa also opposed the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq, but is also seeking to ease badly strained relations between the two governments. Hinzman could face charges of desertion if sent home and would face up to 5 years in prison. He and seven other U.S. military deserters are being represented by Jeffrey House, a Wisconsin native who came to Canada in 1970 to avoid the draft during the Vietnam War. The Pentagon has urged the deserters to return to the United States and take up their concerns at their respective military bases. "We are an army serving a nation at war," the army said in a statement after Thursday's ruling. "Each of us volunteered to serve, and the vast majority serve honorably. AWOL and desertion are crimes that go against army values, degrade unit readiness in a time of war, and may put the lives of other soldiers at risk." Hinzman, 26 years old, lives with his wife and young son in Toronto, where Quakers and the War Resisters Coalition of anti-war groups have taken on his cause and provided some shelter. He fled from Fort Bragg, North Carolina, in January 2004, weeks before his 82nd Airborne Division was due to go to Iraq. He had served 3 years in the Army, but had applied for conscientious objector status before his unit was sent to Afghanistan in 2002. Hinzman argued before the board in December that he would have had to take part in war crimes if he went to Iraq, saying the war there is illegal. He said he would be persecuted if forced to return to the United States. Hinzman also testified he'd be willing to fulfill his four-year obligation to the Army, but not to participate in combat. Hinzman's lawyer estimated as many as 100 American war resistors are hiding in Canada, waiting to see how Hinzman's case is played out before coming forward. Five of the eight men publicly seeking asylum in Canada attended an anti-war rally where protesters shouted anti-American slogans across from the U.S. consulate in downtown Toronto. "I was faced with situations where if I followed orders, I would have killed innocent people," which he refused to do. And this story from Reuters: "The Army expects to miss its recruiting goals this month and next, and is working on a revised sales pitch appealing to the patriotism of parents," Army Secretary Francis J. Harvey said Wednesday. "Because of the military manpower strains caused by simultaneous wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, some in Congress have raised the possibility of reinstituting the draft. This is the first time the United States has been in a sustained period of combat since the all-volunteer force was introduced in 1973. The Air Force and Navy, which have relatively smaller roles in Iraq and Afghanistan, have no recruiting problems, but the Army and Marines are hard-pressed. The Army missed its recruiting goal for February by 27%. As of February 28th, the regular Army was 6% below the number of recruits it had expected to sign up at that point in the recruiting year. The Army Reserve was 10% off, and the Army National Guard was 25% off. I've challenged our human resource people to get as innovative as they can, and even as we speak, we've got a number of new ideas," Army Secretary Francis J. Harvey said Wednesday. "One of those new approaches is designed to persuade more parents to steer their children to the Army. We're going to appeal to their patriotism. That might be done through a new advertising campaign," he said. He is also encouraging more members of Congress as well as senior Army leaders and Army boosters to spend time in local communities touting the benefits of military service. The Army also has increased the number of recruiters on the street by 33% and is offering bigger sign-up bonuses. Last week, the Army announced that the National Guard and Reserve are raising the maximum age for recruits from 34 to 39 in order to expand the pool of potential enlistees. In a related matter, the Army said more people in the individual ready reserve, those no longer in uniform and not obligated to train, are going to be hearing from the Army in the weeks ahead. Harvey also disclosed that the Army is looking at changing its policies on having more than one sibling in a combat zone at the same time. The current policy is that if one of two siblings in the combat zone is killed, the Army will consider removing the remaining one from the combat zone if the surviving soldier or his parents request it. Oh, it's starting to feel a bit drafty around here. And that's the news. Have a good day.
Next, we have some recordings from the Portsmouth, New Hampshire, March 20th, 2005 rally against the Iraq War. Some of it is quite serious, some of it is street theater. See if you can tell the difference.
Well, I'm happy to see the support of people beeping their horns as they're going by, and it's wonderful to see. I came here and there were about three people holding signs, and it's turned into a crowd of about 50. And I know that I feel a real sense of solidarity with people around the world who are really disappointed in the unjust war being carried out by the United States. I was on the internet yesterday and I came across a slideshow of pictures that the Associated Press has, and anyone can go and look at these pictures showing people in many, many countries around the world calling George Bush a war criminal. Essentially, he's perceived as a global terrorist, and it's my duty as someone who has somewhat of an opportunity to change things from within this country to voice my opinion. So I feel like it's my duty to do this because people around the world are also standing out and speaking out against this war.
And your banner here says, U.S. out of Iraq now. This is Steve Diamond from Making Waves Radio. I'm here in Market Square with about 50 people or more are demonstrating on the second anniversary of the attack on Iraq. How does the anniversary make you feel?
It makes me sick being a combat veteran myself. It makes me sick, to tell you the truth. We killed far too many people. My question to the administration is, how can you be pro-life and pro-war? It doesn't work. It's kind of a conflict.
What war were you in?
Vietnam. And I know the cost of war. And these are minor numbers.
100,000 Iraqis dead, for instance.
100,000 Iraqis dead. These are minor numbers of what's going to happen if we keep it up.
What parallels do you see, besides just the fact that people get killed in war, between Vietnam and this one?
Man, it's countless. There's so many, you know. I see these young soldiers coming back. One young man I seen on television the other day, one of the heroes, as far as I'm concerned, deserted and went to Canada. Now he's giving lectures of how immoral war is. And I see a lot of that went on during the Vietnam War, and we were labeled when we come back, you know, for protesting the war and speaking up against it, you know. So there's going to be a lot of that going as this war continues. And I see the administration continually lying to us about the reasons for going to war. You know, they haven't told the truth yet about it. You know, there were no weapons of mass destruction. It's just continuous lies. Same thing as Vietnam was. You know, it's continuous lies. It's all about money. That's all it's about.
Getting back to going to Canada, I understand this time the Canadian government is going to extradite anyone who tries to seek refuge in Canada. Have you heard about that? Or
I haven't heard about that, no. I just seen this young man on the news that kind of was said he deserted, you know. I think he showed courage in doing the right thing and protesting an immoral war, an illegal war.
Salam alaikum.
What's your name?
Fatma Mabuti.
Nice to meet you. What brings you out here today?
I am here to let the American people know how grateful we are in Iraq that President Bush brought democracy and hypocrisy in our country. And thank you so much, American people, for liberating our oil. It was just stuck in the ground for so many years, and you have come to liberate our oil. It is a good thing. We are so excited in Iraq, and I am here to tell the American people that I'm on a public relations tour with, you know, the prestigious journalist Jeff Gannon. He's now formed a public relations firm. And so I am representing the Iraqi people here, and Mr. Gannon is my guide in America.
Who is Jeff Gannon? I don't believe I'm familiar with that name.
Oh, he's a very famous reporter. You haven't heard of him?
Oh, wait. Was he the prostitute, kind of? The male prostitute?
No. Is that true? I did not hear that. Oh, my. That's a disgrace. I can't believe that. No. That is democratic leftist propaganda.
Oh, okay. I understand Bush has said that that we should and will be moving to alternative energies instead of oil in the next few years. However, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge has recently been voted in the budgetary process to be opened for drilling, which won't come online for another 10 years or so. What do you think about that?
Well, we are very happy to have the American people and their corporations come to Iraq and take our oil, because we know that America is a great country and they must be doing a good thing. They're a powerful country, so it must be good what they're doing here in our country. I mean, for example, privatization. Before, all the Iraqis had free education, free health care. Now we are told privatization is coming to Iraq and that will be better. So we are very excited about it. If it's, you know, it's good like life in America, then it's got to be good for Iraqi people.
Well, we'll see what happens.
Yes, we are very excited. We heard that Rupert Murdoch is going to be buying Al Jazeera. And so the people from the Middle East, we are so excited because we are going to get Fear Factor, Survivor, and The Simpsons. So it's great. Life is great. It's really getting good in Iraq. Thank you very much. Thank you for liberating our country. Thank you.
I'm here at the Antifa SBR demonstration on the anniversary, second anniversary of the attack on Iraq, the second attack on Iraq. It's a little complicated following all these things, keeping track of which attack is which. A little confusing. I'm here with Brad Carr. Do you have any comments about the anniversary?
Well, this is my third demonstration in 2 days. I was in Milford yesterday, and we were at a town meeting with Charlie Bass, and a lot of good comments from the people who were there. Kind of put him on the spot a little bit. And then Concord in the afternoon, good turnout there. And then here today is a good turnout here. I don't know, count maybe about 75 or 100 people.
Anything you'd like to report back from the demonstration in Concord? I wasn't able to make it to that point.
No, but people passing by, I think the response has been overwhelmingly supportive. You get a few people who are angry, but, you know, and giving you the digit, but mostly I think 90% of the reaction, 95% of the reaction is positive. People are starting to agree. The newest poll out that I heard was 55% of the people believe it was a mistake
to invade Iraq,
to go into Iraq.
You spoke with some Charlie Bass was who you spoke with yesterday.
Yes, he had a town hall meeting at the town hall in Milford. He had several of them before that. He came to Milford. He's doing a series of them, as are I think all the representatives, supposedly looking for people's opinions, but I don't know how seriously they take them. What I asked him was that the administration likes to talk about the death tax, and that there's a death tax that nobody's really talking about in Washington, and that's the cost of the war. And I also asked him about the trillions of dollars that is unaccounted for in the Pentagon budgets. Year after year, they just ignore, they don't have an accounting because they can't account for trillions of dollars of taxpayer money. And it's probably going down black holes to fund CIA and other kinds of operations around the world. It doesn't just disappear.
In the Iraqi newspapers, it was printed that quite a few billions of dollars from oil revenues disappeared somewhere.
Halliburton did scam the country and the taxpayers out of lots of money.
Was Charlie Bass getting a lot of tough questions from...
He was. There were a lot of... it was supposed to be a town hall meeting about Social Security, and there was a woman who was 95 years old who was telling him how she couldn't afford the high prices anymore, and there were a lot of over 60 and 70 year old people there who were angry about the tax cuts for the wealthy and privatization. Most people were against privatization.
I hope he gets a lot more heat at all of his other events.
I hope so. I hope he does.
This is Steve Diamond from Making Waves Radio. I'm here at the Antifa SPR Peace Vigil on the second anniversary of the attack on Iraq, the second attack on Iraq. There's at least 50 people out here with a lot of signs. What brings you out here today, and how do you feel about how do you feel on the second anniversary?
I feel very passionate about this administration and pretty much all of their policies. This is just one more. As you can see, my sign is very full, and yet I still had to leave off at least 100 of their atrocities. I wish the American people would wake up and see what's happening, because we're in a real state of emergency here.
Lies, lies, lies. Bush is a liar. He's lying about Social Security. He's lying about our freedom of speech laws. He lies about the state of our economy and our jobless rate. He lies about Iraq.
And he cuts veterans' benefits, and he's gutted all our environmental standards. He slashes education. I'm a teacher. Tax cuts that only help his friends, who he owes. Uh-huh. He's supporting fake news now. Mm-hmm. Incredible. Breaking international law repeatedly.
Uh-huh.
Fascinating that he's managed to get away with this.
So you're a teacher.
Yes, I am.
What do you teach?
I teach fifth grade.
Uh-huh. Which town?
I'm in the Seacoast area.
Have you found occasion to bring up the goings-on and of domestic and foreign policy with your fifth graders, or has it not really come up much?
It comes up often, and I kind of gauge the climate of the town I work in, which is a pretty wealthy town, mm-hmm. through my students. But I try to, obviously, appear apolitical because I think that's part of my job. Mm-hmm. They certainly know my feelings.
Uh-huh.
However, I'm fortunate to work with all people that feel the same way. I think all educators across the board feel the same way about No Child Left Behind and the Bush administration's policies in general.
What's so bad about No Child Left Behind?
Oh, boy. For one thing, if you're a failing school, the way they define failing schools is incorrect. If you're a failing school, you have your funding cut rather than enhanced. Uh-huh. If you don't make a full gain each year, you are considered a failing school. So my school across the board, for example, was in the 96th percentile last year, and we were again this year, so we're a failing school. Clearly we're an outstanding school, and yet we've been put on notice that we're failing. By 2012, all schools will be failing because of this. The focus is on standardized testing, because those are more of W's friends that he owes money to or who backed him for his campaigns.
It sounds like it's
not on children.
It sounds like it fits perfectly in with the theme of starving the beast of government.
Yes.
Is the end point eliminating all social programs at all, from education
that's
to...
That's my feeling. Don't you agree?
I
Medicare, healthcare, education. It's just one of many social programs that has taken the slash. It's a terrifying, terrifying time. I know teachers who are excellent, administration who is excellent, who are leaving solely because of No Child Left Behind. Not because we can't meet their standards, but because their standards are not attainable.
Hi, I'm Laurie Couture, my son Robbie.
It's the second anniversary of the second invasion of Iraq, and we're out here on this beautiful vernal equinox day, I believe it is. There's at least 50 to 75 people out here with peace signs and so forth. What brings you out today?
The fact that
it's going to be my first protest.
It's Robbie's first protest, yes. And I'm terrified to think of four more years of a government that seems to be slowly and insidiously moving more and more towards fascism, you know, and stripping away our First Amendment rights, our Fourth Amendment rights, and going in and invading a country that never asked for our help and assistance. Yeah. I've never seen an administration so hell-bent on world domination, and, you know, frankly, it's terrifying. I'm worried about my son's future and, you know, the future of... you know, his children, and what this country is going to look like.
So, Robbie, your sign here says, get out of Iraq, stop the war.
Yeah.
So, it looks like, did you make it yourself?
Yeah.
Very evenly printed.
I'm against Bush.
What about Bush? What's he doing that you don't like?
Well, he's sending troops into Iraq for no reason whatsoever.
Uh-huh. Well,
just to get oil.
I'm really concerned about the apathy in our country. This country was founded on people who are rebels and dissidents and really passionate people who are trying to start a nation based on democracy. And now the majority of our citizens are, you know, content to just sit on their couches and watch TV, and they're more concerned about what's happening on Survivor than what's happening over in Iraq and what's happening to our Constitution and Social Security and the fact, little known facts about Bush, such as that he supports the paddling of children in schools.
What?
Yeah, I mean, that happens in, I think it's 21 states it is still legal to paddle children in schools, you know. To
private schools or public?
No, public schools, to actually beat them, and it's completely legal. And so, I mean, there's a lot of things out there that people are completely ignorant to, and they're content in their ignorance, and that's what really bothers me. And, you know, to see just this small group out here shows me that there's a glimmer of, you know, passion, you know, still out there.
I've heard it said that, speaking of the couch factor,
yeah,
the TV couch factor,
I've heard that the what's going on in Iraq, you know, that they talk about it being sort of an extreme makeover of democracy.
Absolutely.
So we'll handle it. Just sit back and relax. We'll do everything
well,
for you.
Well, you know what's so funny is we had, when we broke away from Great Britain, we were completely doing that on our own, independently, as a new nation. And here we are going over to a nation that didn't ask for our help, has explicitly pretty much told us, get the heck out of here. And yet we're trying to impose our value system onto them. And in essence, making them too weak to uphold the democracy because they haven't really been able to fight for it themselves. I mean, they really need to overthrow their own government and decide what kind of government they want, whether they want democracy or not. And I think that if the Iraqis said, look, we need your help, please come over and help us, you know, that's a little bit different than us just going over and taking over a nation and pretty much doing what we want with it and imposing that on them.
So it's a bit of a breach of trust has occurred.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then you have to ask yourself, what nation's next? Is it Iran next? South Korea, then what? You know, Turkey, Russia? So, you know, where do we stop?
Well, the Iraqis do want democracy, at least now. And
yeah.
Some people did come out, and it was dangerous for them to vote. But if you look at the platforms of the parties that won, the main party that won, for instance, said, we're going to get the occupation ended as soon as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what they've been wanting. They've, like, okay, you know, thanks for overthrowing Saddam Hussein, but we really want you out of here. We really want our way of life. And, you know, give it 10 years and there's going to be a McDonald's on every corner in Iraq. I mean, there's, you know, this globalization concept and this monopolization. What is democracy? And, you know, is it Bush's democracy or is it, you know, real for the people, by the people? And I don't see that happening here anymore. We had 50% of the vote saying they didn't want this man. And you know, 4 years ago he stole the election. That's not for the people, by the people. That's saying that whatever this group of, you know, officials wants is what's going to happen.
There's all these tough, complicated words about, you know, globalization and free trade and all these difficult concepts. But really, maybe it just boils down to his sign there of the money.
That's right.
Inequality.
Absolutely.
Keep seeing us everywhere, as far as the eye can see. It's like some river overflowing. We got Muslims, we got Christians, we got pagans, we got Jews, we got atheists, anarchists, socialists, we even got a liberal or two. On the day we all said stop the war, on the day we all said stop the war, we got kafirs, we got t-shirts, hijabs and rainbow scarves. We got placards that say we're angry. We got placards that make you laugh. We got whistles, badges, banners, 10,000 djembes and a salsa band. We got pensioners, we got pushchairs, arm in arm and hand in hand. On the day we all said stop the war, we all said stop the war. We got the actress and the bishop, we got tankies, we got trucks, and some got extra sandwiches in case their mates forgot. We got respectable housewives from suburbia who've never done this sort of thing before. We're the international sex workers of the world united with the girl and the boy next door. On the day We all said stop the war. On down. We all said stop the war. We got that what's her name from off of the telly. We got that bloke I met called Steve. But we are more than just this 2 million. We are Ramallah and Tel Aviv. We are New York, Paris, Berlin, Moscow, Cape Town, Cairo, Bangkok to Glasgow. It's like some river overflowing on the day we all said stop the war. We all said stop the war. On the day we all said stop the war. On the day we all said stop the war. I keep seeing us everywhere. Keep seeing us everywhere.
That was We All Said Stop the War by Rob Johnson. Next, we have the Frieda Berrigan talk about women and war, recorded on March 22, 2005 in Durham, New Hampshire.